Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
This Monday edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code Locked On at MyBookie.ag. Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am here with my host, the incomparable Benjamin Solak. You can follow him on Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can also follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, we got a W, brother. How you doing?
Oh, loving that W, man. You know I'm always feeling good after a win. And this was my sort of win. This was a running game sort of win. You know how I feel about those.
Yeah, you know, in the offseason, I was watching Blunt, and I just saw, and I think I brought this up to you one time, where I just saw like 3 or 4 straight runs, and it was Blunt running through like people's faces and whatnot. I'm like, wouldn't it be nice if the Eagles could finish a game off like this? And I really felt like that just wear you down and then beat you up at the end. And that run where Blunt used Desmond King as a punching bag, it just made my heart swell, man. What did you think about the overall performance? And then we'll get into some of the running game stats as we go along.
Not only was the dedication to the running game good and the use of the running game on early downs to work into manageable third down situations good, which I think I've talked about 300 times in 4 different mediums, but whatever. But also the nature of this running game was really cool. Like after Blunt got up from that long run where, like you said, he took Desmond King and just kind of planted him firmly in the ground of Carson, California. And he got up and he started flexing to Eagle fans there in the stands, which, I mean, we talked about how ridiculous the home field was going to be moving into it. It was absurd. I felt legitimately poor for real Chargers fans.
Yeah. It was louder on third down for the Eagles fans. The boos were louder for flags when we got flagged, like everything.
It was third down, and Jordan Hicks starts waving to the crowd to get loud, and the crowd got loud in California. That's awful. Oh, just that's so sad. But when Blunt goes over and he starts flexing to those Eagle fans and they're cheering him on, it just kind of came into my head like, Blunt's a Philly guy.
Yeah.
He plays like a Philly dude does. You know, yeah. He's just got that nature to him where, okay, anytime I pick up even just a first down, I'm going to tell the entire stadium about it. Everybody better cheer. That sort of Philadelphia nature to him. And I think, I'll put it to you this way. Doug Peterson is a much better play caller when the run game is successful. When he feels the need to manufacture running game-esque looks with screens and with these wide receiver swing passes, he calls them at inadvantageous times, and we get frustrated with him. When this run game is working, this was, in my opinion, one of Peterson's best called games since he came here to the Eagles, and was also one of Wentz's best games just technically as the quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. And the effect of the run game on those two things can't be understated.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we stuck to it. Even with Wentz having 6 carries, you take those away, we had 36 carries from our running backs. We carried the ball for 200 yards with our running backs. And like you said, like all that cute little stuff with the screens and everything like that, they come off much better when a team has to respect the run. They come up those backside slants when you hit the inside zone, pull it out and throw it. That worked like 3 times in a row for us. So yeah, and then you know we got things working with a little bit more vertical game as well, which was nice. Wentz did a good job of spreading the ball around. He was 17 of 31, 242. A touchdown, only went down once on a sack. Ertz was our leading receiver with 5 receptions, 81 yards. Aguilar got involved. Smallwood got involved, which we talked about in the past game, with 4 catches for 45 yards. So he kind of, that played out the way that in which we wanted to see it play out, with Smallwood being there for probably, I think he was in there for more snaps, but also getting involved in the receiving game and just pounding the rock with Blunt, man. So, okay, we got up early in this game with Alshon Jeffery getting his touchdown there, which was nice because that's where we wanted to be. We wanted to put them down and make them abandon the run. They only ran the ball 13 times for 58 mm-hmm. yards and a touchdown. Now, obviously, that one touchdown, apologies to Austin Eckler, who you pointed out in a previous show that you liked.
Yeah.
But what did you think about our defense against the run?
Yeah, so I'll tell you that we found ways to hide the loss of Ronald Darby, and we found ways to hide the loss of Rodney McLeod and Jordan Hicks with you know, varying degrees of success. The loss of Cox was unmistakable. Mm. And it's not even so much, you know, the interior rush was still there. Bo Allen had a good game. Timmy Jernigan is still a beast in the middle. But the attention that Cox demands as the best player, unquestionably, on the Philadelphia Eagle defense and defensive line, the attention that he demands is what allows guys like Brandon Graham and Vinnie Curry to tee off the way they do. And the lack of Cox on that line, it was easier to communicate, it was easier to diagnose, and it was just overall, it's an easier front four to handle. Mm-hmm. And you didn't see a lot of blitzes from my eye test. Obviously, I haven't gone back and checked out the full film.
No, there really wasn't.
From my eye test, yeah, you haven't seen that many blitzes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we kind of fool ourselves into thinking that this front four can get pressure, you know, with the pieces it has. Obviously, Brandon Graham is fantastic. Timmy Jernigan is very good. But without Cox, there just wasn't enough there. I mean, there was not consistent pressure on Rivers, especially getting late into the fourth quarter. You know, hot day, how much of a rotation is there? You've got Justin Hamilton and Steven Means, guys who don't usually play, both active and both seeing reps. And so that was concerning. I'll ask you this, though. There was a lot of talk about the corner play. You had Rasul Douglas, who got burned on a couple reps. You had Jalen Mills, who was his usual, you know, debatable performance, let's put it that way. How concerned were you with what you saw from Rasul Douglas? What were your thoughts as to how the corners were deployed and how they played?
I thought Rasul struggled to track Keenan Allen horizontally across the field. I think some of his short area quickness showed up there. I mean, they had two receivers go over 100 yards with Allen and Williams. Mills predictably gets burned for, what was it, the 75-yarder to Tyrell Williams. I mean, outside of those,
it was Douglas on that 75-yarder.
Was it Douglas? All I saw.
Right, so it was, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Douglas at the line, and then Mills came in back over the top.
Right, yeah.
And I'm 90% positive. I didn't see a good replay, but I'm 90% positive it was Yankee. They just ran a dig underneath the post going over the top, and I probably Rodney McLeod just went ate the dig, yeah. And then Mills tried to take it over the top. I mean, I don't know if you're playing some sort of switch coverage there, if you're inverting your coverage and sending Mills into the deep, but either way, you know, somebody did something wrong.
No, but that sounds right, because that happened to McLeod earlier in the season as well, where they were in cover three, and he bit hard on an inside breaking route and left his deep zone, so can't wait to dig into the All-22 for that. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just two business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So we gave up the two big plays. I thought they did a decent job of not allowing too much yak after the catch. We knew we were going to be a little bit conservative with the coverage and kind of let the game come to us. But look, I mean, for what this secondary is, for the injuries that we have, I hate to say that allowing two receivers to go over 100 yards and allowing Phillip Rivers 347 yards is kind of okay with me. It's okay with me because we shut the run down almost entirely. I think that's the only thing that was our saving grace. But it's still concerning, man. It's still so concerning. We can't hang with athletes like Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams. We just can't do it on a consistent basis. We're not going to be able to hang with Odell. We're not going to be able to hang with Shepard. We're going to have one or two of those big plays a game right now until we get Darby back.
Yeah. if you look at it, since you've had the Mills-Douglas starting duo, you've given up a 70-yard touchdown per game. Right. You know, and I think that's kind of going to be the reality moving forward, is you can, you know, shield them as much as you like, and you can try to scheme for them as best you can. And obviously limited front four personnel, i.e. Cox being injured, kind of, you know, hamstrings you in that regard. Looking forward, you've got one of the speediest wide receiver teams coming up, you know, coming around the mountain as far as Arizona Cardinals go. Right. Obviously, they're coming to Philadelphia on Sunday for the next game. And J.J. Nelson and John Brown and even Jerron Brown to an extent, I don't know the degrees to which those guys are healthy, to be honest, because Arizona struggles with that wide receiver health. But if they've got a couple of those speedsters active, you're going to see, you know, some issues in that regard for sure. Can I throw some numbers at you?
Yeah, up to always. That's what we do here, man.
You've got Carson Wentz came into the season when the game was decided by 7 or less points. Carson Wentz came into the season 1-6, and he has since been in the first quarter of the season 2-1 in those games. Beautiful. He came into the season 2-8 on the road. He has since been in those games 2-1 in the first quarter of the season. And last but not least, Carson Wentz is now 6-1 in the month of September. What are you thinking about those?
That's very, very encouraging. And I hope that, I mean, look, we all knew the road struggles. I don't necessarily count this as a true road game. However, that traveling to the West Coast thing does make it a road game in that sense. Having your quarterback come through in those clutch situations, as we've seen, and also have a running game to lean on that now maybe we'll have more trust in. I think that's what gets me more excited about everything. And also, a clutch kicker that goes 4-for-4 after winning the game for us last week. Is Jake Elliott a freaking star, or is he a freaking star?
I don't know if you've seen my viral tweets. I'm very impressive on Twitter, Michael. But last week, after Elliott hit the 61-yarder, I just simply tweeted out that Jake Elliott was a
upgrade,
undeniable upgrade over Justin Tucker, the kicker for the Baltimore Ravens, who actually missed a 62-yarder today, though. And I immediately faulted him for that, though. You can't really fault a guy for missing a 62-yarder. But if anything goes to prove the impact of confidence in the game of a kicker, especially a young kicker, it's this. I mean, if you told me 2 weeks ago that Jake Elliott was going to come out into a game and attempt 4 field goals longer than 40 yards in a game that we ended up winning by 2. Mm-hmm. He put up 12 points on the board in a game that we ended up winning by 2. That, you know, that would have been terrified me. But he came out and there was no doubt on any of those. I mean, none of them close, none of them near the uprights. He's, you know, he's grooving. He's feeling it.
Yeah, you knew he was making all those. Okay, so let's talk about the hard stuff here, because do you believe that the Chargers started to figure out how to attack us and do it with a good amount of success in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter where they scored 14 points, because there were big plays to be had?
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's definitely, as far as concerning numbers go, 52 fourth quarter points allowed in the last 3 weeks per friend of the podcast, Jimmy Kemsky. Mm-hmm. That's no bueno. That's not good. And you know, maybe you could have thrown around turnovers against the Chiefs. You had a turnover inside of the 30, and against the Giants, you had a turnover right around the 30. But here in a game where Carson Wentz did not turn over the football, very, very huge. Carson Wentz protected the football very well in this game, and the Eagles possessed the football for almost 40 minutes, 39 minutes and 18 seconds. That's almost a 2-to-1 ratio there for time of possession,
which we are so not used to as Eagles fans in recent history.
Which is so confusing. In that game, With 40 minutes we have the ball, there's no reason for the defense to be giving up late fourth quarter points. And this is where it starts to now become an issue, because you could have talked about the turnovers, but in this game, it's really scary. What does that come down to? Well, you've been dealing with a lot of injuries, and I know we keep putting weight on these injuries, and we kind of keep attributing all these defensive struggles to it, and it's not just a scapegoat. One of the things about injuries that is so difficult is it makes you very, very scheme limited, right? When you don't have guys like Ronald Darby who can play successfully man and zone coverage, it becomes a lot harder when you're putting guys like Jalen Mills or Rasul Douglas to play anything other than, you know, cover 3 with a 5-yard cushion, or cover 1 with, you know, a 1-yard cushion or whatever. It's you become so much more narrow in just the field of opportunities that you have. Jim Schwartz has always been a guy who likes to stick to his scheme and do what he thinks is best, even in the face of some struggles. You tack that onto the fact that the Eagles are just low in the depth chart right now. There's no way around it. They're just low in the depth chart in the secondary right now. You can understand why offenses have started to figure out after about three quarters what's working. This is a narrative that right now there's an explanation, but you've got to track it moving down the season. Because if they start to get healthy and this is still a problem, now you've got a big conditioning issue on your defense. And that's going to come to bite you, especially late in the season.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, look at what having somebody like Casey Hayward for the Chargers does for that defense as far as just not being an absolute liability. He had five passes defended today. He played a fantastic game against a very physical Alshon Jeffrey, who was battling to get open out there. We had two pass defenses as a team. So yeah, just Casey Hayward getting it done.
Can I ask you something about Casey Hayward, like adjacently about Casey right. Hayward? I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but whatever. When are we going to start talking about Alshon Jeffrey not winning 50-50 matchups? I don't even want to say consistently, because obviously 50-50 matchup kind of dictates that it's not consistent. It should be about 50% of the time. But up until this point, you know, if you're not going to separate, then I need you to win through contact and I need you to win at the catch point.
Right.
And Alshon Jeffrey is not a great separator, and I haven't seen him do that as much. I mean, for a guy that we are funneling, you know, at least 6-7 targets to on every single game that we've had him so far. I mean, so he's averaging over the four games, 8.5 targets per game. For him to only have put forth over 56 yards once, yeah. he's put up the 92 yard game against Kansas City, and then everything else has been about 50 yards or lower. I need to see more. If we're going to keep giving him this volume, I'm going to need to see more. I simply am. Like my biggest question about this offense right now, assuming that Wisniewski stays at the left guard and LeGarrette Blount continues to see 13, 15 touches a game, then my biggest question about this offense right now is, all right, Alshon is not living up to expectations and Torrey Smith keeps dropping footballs. We have the same problem we did last year, man.
Torrey Smith is so frustrating to me because he did drop one and Wentz had him. And I thought Wentz's deep ball was much more accurate, better touch over the intermediate areas as well.
Yeah, I was about to say that's not the deep ball, though. That's the intermediate ball.
The Torrey one was fairly deep, wasn't it?
I mean, the Torrey one was about, you know, 25, 30 yards down the field. I'm not, that throw has never been my concern.
Right, it's been
my concern is the Marcus Johnson double move where you put the ball directly on Casey Hayward.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of different places he could put that from that distance. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, as far as Alshon goes, man, you're right. He lacks the lateral agility and the burst to separate naturally when he doesn't have space at the break point. I think he's very good in and out of the break point for his limited athleticism in those different areas. But he has struggled to separate at the break point with physicality and come down with those balls to an extent. Like I said, I think it's going to kind of even out, but I would love to see his catch rate bump up a little bit more because, I mean, that's how he has to win. I mean, he's not going to win, like you said, with quickness and all that stuff. He has to win at the catch point. You saw him with the one down the sideline and whatnot. He went up to go get it and didn't high point it. And he struggled with some of the other curls and whatnot where Casey Hayward was really sticky on him. So, I mean, I agree. I would like to see more. I've been kind of defending Alshon to this point, but those little warts in his game are definitely showing up, and I would like to see that be more consistent for sure.
Casey Hayward is not Los Angeles' number one corner. It's Jason Brett, who's currently injured.
Hayward's a pretty darn good corner. He'd be a number one corner for us.
No, not with Darby on the field.
Darby's not on the field.
Okay, well, right. Well, Jason Brett's not on the field, right, so he's CB1 for the Chargers right now. But what I'm saying is, I mean, Alshon Jeffrey at 6'3", 220. Casey Hayward is below 6. He's below 200. That should be a guy. If Alshon Jeffrey is a physical catch point winning receiver, he should beat that guy.
That's what I'm saying.
And if he can't, then the Janoris Jenkins-esque players who are more physical and who are more long than Casey Hayward, who gave Jeffrey problems, will continue to give him problems. And then these type of corners will. And when is he going to take over a game? that's what he was brought in here to do, because if we just wanted a high volume guy to pick up 8 yards, we would have kept Jordan Matthews, right. But we didn't. We brought in Alshon to create more big plays and to win at the catch point and help out Carson Wentz, and I'm not seeing it a quarter of the season.
Yeah, and Wentz has played fairly well. He's missed some, but his receiver's got to go make a play for him. I mean, that goes for Alshon, that goes for Torrey Smith. I thought Aguilar had a good game. Ertz,
great game.
Nice and steady, man. He's been producing like crazy. But hey, at the end of the day, you look at this division. We're 3-1. Cowboys lost today. Did you see any of that game?
Oh, absolutely. I saw the end of that game. I also picked the Rams as my upset of the week. So
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, I played some golf in fantasy this weekend. So I was kind of proud of my boy. Look,
do you want to talk Los Angeles Rams fantasy real quick? Because last week I started Cooper Kupp and Sammy Watkins had six receptions, over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. So this week I switched them and Sammy Watkins didn't get a target and Cooper Kupp had about 6 receptions and a touchdown. So I'm fine with the way Los Angeles is currently doling out their wide receiver looks. It's okay.
Dallas has trouble covering slot wide receivers and Cooper Kupp went off because Dallas struggles in that area. And I played the Kupp golf stack, and can you imagine after this summer of nonsense and the rhetoric and the disparaging words said about Jared Goff and the whole Wentz versus Dak thing and all that stuff, to see Goff come out and I think outplay Dak Prescott? How many people look like fools in retrospect because they judged a rookie quarterback after 1 year with an offensive system that didn't have an identity, with a head coach that is known for less than mediocrity?
Yeah. I'll tell you what I thought from Dak, and I don't want to say too much because we've obviously got our State of the League check-in because we're a quarter way through the season, so that's our Thursday pod.
Right.
But as far as what we've seen from Dak right now, it's not that he's playing poorly. It's that all the mistakes that he didn't make as a rookie that he was supposed to make because he was a rookie, he is making. In the sense, like, you know when Carson Wentz does that stupid thing where he throws the football even though he's clearly tackled, right. He just kind of like chucks it into space and hopes?
Yeah.
Dak never did that, and now he's starting to do nonsense like that.
Yeah.
And it's really eating away at the Cowboys' efficacy. And then their left guard, Chaz Green, is buns. He's just not good at football, and it's causing significant problems on their offensive line. But all that's on Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. We will talk about the Cowboys regression that someone named Michael Kist on this show called before the season for all the very same reasons that we're talking about now. And the Giants lost today. So it's a beautiful day, man. It's a beautiful, beautiful day.
Oh, what a day. And wait, the Redskins, what are they doing?
All right, so yeah, Washington plays the Chiefs. That's a tough matchup on Monday night. They're 2-1 currently. I look for them to go 2-2.
Yes, sir.
We're going to own this division, man, in the first quarter of the season, which we had talked about being so important because the way this schedule lines up for us, the next four games, if we can take the next four games and be 3-1, through and then get to that second part of the schedule, get Darby back, where we really start to face some tough challenges and also some important divisional games against the Cowboys. Man, this quarter of the season was a success, and I think that's really all you can ask for at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. And looking towards second quarter, I mean, you've got a game that, very much like the Chargers, a good playoff team should win against the Cardinals coming into Philadelphia next week. You've got at the Panthers the week after on a short week. It's a Thursday night game. And that's an interesting one because the Panthers just beat the Patriots. And they have the opportunity to build a little bit of momentum, the Panthers do.
Yeah, but the Patriots, their downfall is the fact that they're giving up the most yards per play in the NFL. So this uptick from the Carolina offense, I don't necessarily know if I buy it. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing, though. I think mentally for your team, beating the Patriots is still beating the Patriots.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And so it depends to, like, you know, if they come in with a good performance the next week that they play, then you're playing in Carolina on a short week. That could be a sneaky game just because Carolina, you know, Cam Newton, you never want to underestimate him. But then you're at home against the Redskins, at home against the 49ers. 3-1 is very reasonable for this slate. And then you're going into the back half of your schedule at 6-2. That's presumably going to put you in the driver's seat of the NFC East. Looks good.
That's where we want to be, man. That's exactly where we want to be. Okay, so we'll be back with more at tomorrow because, I mean, every day we're bringing you the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, of course. Make us part of your drive to work, part of your lunchtime, part of your drive home. part of your nightcap. Do whatever you need to do, however you need to listen to us. We'll be there for you every weekday. Also, make sure that you rate, review, leave your Twitter handle on iTunes. Every week we are giving away a free PFF Edge subscription, so make sure you get in on that. Ben, let the gentle listeners know what we have on tap for them tomorrow.
All right, what's up, gentle listeners? We're looking at Twitter Tuesday tomorrow. Get excited. Obviously, we've got the Redskins playing on Monday night against the Chiefs, and so we'll have the opportunity to talk a little bit about that game. But if you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Michael Kist, at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. Use the hashtag LockedOnEagles. Any thoughts, any questions, any sort of input you have over the first quarter of the Eagles season, we'd love to hear. We'd love to talk about it. If you don't have a Twitter account, that's fine. Hit us up in the reviews on iTunes, whatever you listen on. We'll do our best to find it.
Right. So if you want to hear our informed and eloquent answers and very, very serious information.
Who? Us?
You're going to have to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. This edition of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie.ag, where they will match your deposit up to 100% bonus. Use the promo code Locked On.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.